Welcome to another episode of the Otaku DX Show with Veef and Deef, our semi-weekly podcast about recent anime and otaku and nerdy stuff that's going on. I am Andrew, sometimes known as Veef. You can follow me on Twitter at VF5SS.
And I am Michael, or Deef in this case, and you can follow me also on Twitter, @Draga_Kun. I'm just going to put in the show notes how to spell it.
That's probably for the best. I also put it in the information for each MP3 file. So it's there, and you can copy it.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. Is there any news that you wanted to do?
There's just one because it actually caught my eye earlier this week. I actually just made a post of it in OCDX as well. The fact that Good Smile Company is making an android of Akiho, the main character from Robotics Notes.
That's cool.
Yes, she even comes with the little hobby robot they use at the beginning of the series. And so I think I might have to make this my first android.
The upcoming Tsubasa from Symphogear will be my first proper Nendoroid. If you don't count the Nendoroid Petit Yonehaku.
That's its own thing, but I'm probably going to get that Tsubasa as well. I just have to get around to it is all.
She has the perfect face.
She does.
I don't think there's any news. Well, actually, one thing I did see on the Master File blog is they're doing a new Master Archive Mobile Suit book, and this time it's all about the Zeta Gundam.
Oh.
And that makes me really happy.
That's cool.
Yeah, so these are books, they're faux technical books done in the style of like books about real weapons of war. They use a lot of CG, a lot of very nicely drawn technical like drawings, lots of cutaways, lots of like really detailed diagrams of like, oh, this is how the mobile suit operates, and a fair bit of text, but you know, they're pretty good even if you just want them for their
pretty pictures.
There's pretty pictures, yeah. So I have all the current Macross books from that line, the Variable Fighter Master File, so they're pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. It's been a pretty light couple of 2 weeks for news. We'll probably get something good to hear in the next week or so once magazine scams start leaking in.
Yeah, I don't know why Japan is always holding on to the print media, but they have to make money somehow.
Yeah, what can you do?
Alright, so we are going to talk about what we've been doing, so now we're on to stuff we got. Would you like to go first?
I have a lot, actually, of things I've been getting recently. The most important being my Figma Telos finally came in.
Can I ask you a question with that
figure?
Are her upper arms, like, weird?
They're at a weird angle, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, because I noticed, like, the fleshy part of her shoulders, they have this little thing that goes in front of the joint.
Yeah, it covers the front of the joint. But it's not at a proper angle compared to her shoulder bits.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird because usually you put that on the side where it doesn't impede articulation.
Ika Musume actually does the same thing, and it confuses the crap out of me.
Okay, so I was just trying to make sure it wasn't a assembly error on my figure.
No, I did have one question though, because this has been frustrating the crap out of me. For her sword part, is it supposed to be really difficult to fit that sword piece and her hand on at the same time?
Oh, I forget. I actually haven't tried it out myself. I would check out some reviews from like Japanese websites to show
how it
goes in. Because I think the diagram and the instructions isn't too helpful.
Well, what happens is the blade piece is actually too thick, such that it actually covers up a good portion of the hole that the hand's supposed to go into. So you can't really get it in there properly. I'm actually considering shaving down a bit of the bottom of the blade so it doesn't happen, though.
Does she have, like, any alternate hands with, like, a half peg?
No, nothing like that.
Oh, that's kind of weird. Might be just as a special way to do it so that it keeps the blade out of the way of the hand, the wrist socket.
Yeah. Someone smarter than me probably figured it out already. I just got to keep messing with it, I think. It's funny because I was telling everyone earlier that this is, like, when Figma's first started coming out, her along with Cosmos were, like, the two that I said, you know what, they're never going to make Figmas of this, but if they do, I will buy it immediately. And so this is, like, kind of going full circle for me in a lot of ways.
Why were you so doubtful of them making Xenosaga Figmas?
Because they, at the time, you know, they were focusing only on anime licenses. This is, like, you know, the first couple were from, like, Haruhi and whatever the big popular show was at the time. Nothing video game related at the time.
Well, I think some of those characters were from, like, visual novels and dating sims. Or at least, like, adaptations of certain things. But then we got Figma Billy Harrington, and all bets were off.
Yeah, between that, RoboCop, and Michael Jackson, they can do whatever the hell they want now.
Yeah, Billy Harrington, if you haven't heard of this. So, this bisexual porn star, pretty buff dude, he's actually very popular in Japan for some reason. He was kind of a meme on the Japanese interwebs. And for whatever reason, Max Factory picked up on this and made a couple of Figmas of him. So you can have your kind of creepy-looking buff dude.
Make buff Woody.
Yeah, you can make buff Woody. I do like the fact that he's one of those characters where he comes with paper... Like a paper craft thing?
Yeah, they do not do that enough, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it's him and Golga 13.
Yeah, and his was a shower, so he could wash off.
Indeed. Didn't he come with a towel, too?
Yes, he did come with a towel. That's what I thought. There's also the Halloween-themed one, where he's dressed in like a little pumpkin outfit.
Yeah. Those are weird toys.
Yeah, they are. All right. What else did you get?
A while back, I picked up a Transformers Prime First Edition Viacon. And I don't know how much you kept up with the First Edition stuff last year.
It seemed kind of confusing to me that they made a bunch of Transformers toys for Prime. And then they went back and thought, oh, these are too complex. We need to make an entire new set of figures.
Yeah, well, basically, like, the very quick summarization of it is that basically only Canada had a lot of these. Like, we got the first wave, which was RC, Bumblebee, and Starscream. And we didn't get any of the later waves, including Cliffjumper and the Vehicon. And so this was a stupidly sought-after toy. Actually, no, I'm messing this up. What happened was this is one of the ones that you could only get in Japan, actually, through First Edition. And so...
Was it Japan or Asia?
It was Japan. It was a Takara thing, as I recall.
Okay.
And it was really bad because the Viacon is, like, the troop builder in the show. And so you'd have to, like, lob down $30-$40 per Viacon in order to, you know, have this thing that you should have, like, three or four of at least. And so Hasbro finally said this year that they're going to bring the rest of the First Edition toys over to the U.S., through Toys R Us. And since I saw it, I said, screw it, I have to get it. This is one of the few cases where this is a cool toy, but the one they released in the main line is actually way better.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm going to post a review of the first edition Viacon on Collection DX pretty soon. But this one has a whole bunch of crap on its back, and its transformation is kind of clunky. It kind of transforms how a movie toy would, where there's a bit of a backpack and you have random wheel pieces everywhere.
Oh, okay.
It looks cool, but the mainline Viacon is the super streamlined one that has, like, no crap on the back or anything like that, to the point where when people first saw pictures, they didn't have any idea how it transformed.
Hmm.
And so, like, I can only recommend this one as, like, if you really like the Viacon, or if you just want this as the curiosity that it is. But it is bigger, okay. though, so at least there's that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Transformers, I can talk about the one thing I've got recently.
Please do.
I've been working. Yes. So I received, after much gnashing of teeth in the waiting for Uncle Sal to deliver this figure, I got my masterpiece Lambor, also known as Sideswipe. There was a lot of discussion about this figure on the internets, because he's not that big, which is kind of weird for Masterpiece. Because I feel like a lot of people still picture the Masterpiece toys as being the size of MP01, the first Masterpiece Optimus. And that was a really big toy, and it had die-cast metal, and a lot of die-cast metal, and all kinds of little weird touches to him. And I had actually read that the Masterpiece line wasn't really meant to continue past Prime. I mean, it's very common. It's just such a common thing in Japan for every random-ass toy line to have, like, numbers, you know. Even the very brief the hybrid style Transformers.
Weren't there, like, only two of those?
There's only two of those, yes. So I don't know if they really plan that to pan out. You know, and other random-ass toy lines have just kind of had one release and then they completely went away.
VF-100.
Yeah, well, you can kind of say it had a couple more releases, because at the very least, besides just, like, variations and repaints, they did make an armored VF-25.
Did they? Oh, yes. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it's not very good, but...
Anyway.
Lambor, or Sideswipe, for the, you know, $50 you're going to be paying for him, he doesn't seem like a lot at first. He does have some really cool touches, that all of his outer panels are painted in a nice shiny red plastic, or shiny red paint, I should say. The plastic actually is kind of a dull red. He looks really good in both modes. He feels right. His transformation is, it's fairly intricate, but it's also quite intuitive. He's similar in many ways to a lot of the old Alternators figures as far as how he transforms, and also similar to Masterpiece Rodimus. But he has the advantage over Rodimus is that by being smaller, they weren't as tempted to use a lot of ratchet joints, which, you know, there's that kind of childlike mentality when it comes to, like, ratchet joints and, like, die-cast. Like, these were things that the toys we grew up with had. And they're not really practical for a toy that's fairly intricate. And I think it turned out really, that Sideswipe turned out really, really great. Because you start playing with him, and even the first day I had him, I transformed him like 20 different times. Because he's just really cool. I think that the coolest thing about his transformation is how on the old original G1 toy, the way you would make him transform is you just kind of pull his chest up. And, you know, that's how you extend the legs backwards. And it's really common in a lot of older, like, G1 toys. You just kind of pull their shins out and then their thighs emerge. With Sideswipe, the way it works is that these panels on the bottom of the car flip 180 degrees back, and then those are the fronts of his legs, and then the top part of the rear of the car, which on a Lamborghini Countach, that's where the engine is, that also flips up, and his feet are on the ends. They're hidden underneath his cabin area, and you just bring these two together. You kind of scissor them out together. But at the same time, you are flipping around the outer wheel and wheel well area, kind of the rear of the sides of the car. And what that does is it allows you to make the leg be twice as long as, you know, as it was in the car mode, But you still get the same image of the classic G1 toy where he's got the wheels on his legs and they're facing, you know, front. You can see them from the front. He also has like a weird thing how part of the midsection of the car that's on the sides of his legs actually folds down to fill in some more of his leg. And also there's a flip-out panel on the front part of his leg that comes in, helps lock it in place, and also fills in like the side of his legs. So he doesn't have, his legs aren't hollow like it was with a lot of alternators. Understandably, you know, he doesn't have any diecast. He does not have rubber tires. He actually is fully licensed by Lamborghini, though. And I have heard that that's going to cause problems with trying to get him out in America.
I hope it doesn't. I really hope it doesn't.
At a cheaper price. Yeah. It's funny, he actually does have like a little foil sticker saying he is an officially licensed Lamborghini related product. It's sort of like, if you are, I said it in my video review, if you aren't used to paying these kind of prices for toys, then it's going to seem overpriced. For the Japanese toy collectors such as ourselves, we're kind of used to that.
Yeah.
And you can do a lot worse. A whole lot worse for like the 5,000 yen he's going for. Because I recall seeing recently this random-ass company, I think it was Sentinel.
Yeah.
Who's been doing a couple of things. They released these really cheap-looking Armored Core action figures. I think they did one of Nineball from the PS2 games. And it looks like a glorified Mobile Suit and action figure. Even kind of worse than that, it has shiny paint that makes it look metallic, but it's like, it doesn't really look like it's worth the 5,000 yen it costs. And I saw they were getting discounted somewhere. So yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it's a great toy. It's looks so much like Sideswipe. It's not, you know, perfect to the cartoon or perfect to the old toy, but it just brings these two images of the character together. And also, for a lot of people, Sideswipe was one of their first Transformers. He's one of the favorites, even though he doesn't really do a whole lot in the cartoon. He's also one of the few Transformers who survived, as far as toys go, into the 90s with the G2 re-release, which has probably the coolest colors, where he's now black with like red detailing. And also all the ones from the 80s that existed and some of the reissues, they are the easiest to handle. Because Sideswipe was the one car who broke the least.
Yeah.
It's hard to break Sideswipe than it is to say to break Prowl or Jazz,
mm-hmm.
or for the few people out there who still have one intact, Mirage.
I've never seen a Mirage intact, actually.
Yeah, I mean you can fix them. They all break in at the waist because he has to spin around to transform. Mm. So yeah. I like him. I hope they do many, many more if this is the standard for the future Autobot cars. I don't know if they're going to run into problems if they want to do licensed cars and the licensor is like Volkswagen, who said they will not allow them to do war toys with their classic Beetle or any of their cars.
Mm-hmm.
Although I did see, I saw fellow reviewer Chachi Power, he had this too. This company that made reshelled Classics Bumblebees, so now they turned into Volkswagen Beetles.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, it's probably the worst part about the third party movement, where people will buy anything so long as it's pure G1,
mm-hmm.
which I was thinking about making this argument on my video review, but you know, people would totally lamp to buy a Masterpiece Lambor if he was put out by a third party company, and they would not care about the price because those two like the two the Ratchet and Ironhide that Iger made, those things are $120 each. Mm-hmm. They're not that much bigger than Lambor.
No. What I think it really comes down to is the fact that, like, because, you know, like you said earlier, you and me, we think, you know, Sideswipe is a pretty good price. You could do worse. I think Transformers fans just like complaining. I think that's all it really comes down to.
Well, it's any fandom likes complaining. Like how the guys in Macross World were complaining that, oh, the VF4 will probably have the standard photoshopped picture of the toy for the box art. Mm. It's like, guys, they've been doing this for, like, 6 years now. You know, I know you want to have a Hidetaka Tenjin piece on the box, but that's for the model kits, guys. Mm-hmm. Come on. But anyway. So what else have you gotten?
Well, just two more things. One's going to be pretty quick. I finally bought a Darth Vader action figure. Somehow throughout my childhood, I managed to never have one.
I have one. Oddly enough.
But, the Vintage Collection line, they finally released one that doesn't suck, which is, I think, the main reason I didn't have a Darth Vader yet. Because despite being this super titular popular character, they can't make a damn good figure of him already. But, no, this one actually doesn't have swivel joints anywhere, so I had to pick it up. Especially because it was on sale at Target, too.
What's the problem with swivel joints?
Well,
does it just break up his look too much?
Well, it's just a personal thing where it's like, you know, Hasbro, you're releasing, you know, Marvel figures that have loads of articulated joints and whatnot, and yet for Star Wars, you still give things swivel joints instead of, you know, ball joints and ankle tilts and all that good stuff. It just feels primitive, kind of. Like, as someone who likes playing with my toys. Yeah. Like, as far as... This is a new figure, that is, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But, no. That's that. And then the main thing that took up the most time and space was I finally got in my Amazon-exclusive G2 Bruticus, which actually shipped on a Sunday. Apparently, Amazon can do that.
Well, I think, how was it shipped?
I'm not sure, because a friend purchased it for me, so it shipped to his house. It got there on a Sunday, so...
Yeah, it's probably like FedEx or
something
UPS.
Something like that, probably UPS, I think. Yeah. But the box for this toy is freaking amazing.
I have to admit, I was a little nostalgic when I saw that classic G2 packaging with the... All black with the...
That terrible pink.
Yes, the terrible pink logo.
Yeah.
For the Transformers name.
Mm-hmm. And they did some really nice vintage style art with this. I'm using vintage probably the wrong way, but they drew a picture of Bruticus specifically in the way they used to draw characters on the old packaging. And what I love is the fact that Bruticus's face is kind of screwed up in the picture. I feel like that was almost intentional. But,
I have to wonder if maybe they photoshopped bits from the original toy, or the original toy box art onto there.
Well, that is a possibility. Maybe.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I don't think it's too out of place to say vintage, because, you know...
Ah, shit. That was 20 years ago.
That was 20...
Yeah, okay,
yeah,
no, if I'm... Yeah.
Yeah, 1992 was 20 years ago now.
Oh,
so.
All right, I'm that old now. Anyway.
You're that old. I just had a birthday.
Okay, so, Bruticus. First thing out of the gate, which I find to be the biggest bummer about this toy, is that this thing is missing a crap ton of paint apps. Like, the original pictures they solicited and put on Amazon, a lot of their weapons were painted, and they had additional details on their faces and things like that. All of that is pretty much missing, actually.
Is this across the board, or is it just
it's
like yours?
It's across the board. Huh. It's a major bummer, and it makes me think I do have to get a sticker set for him something, if that company Reprolabels does it.
Yeah.
Like,
they're usually pretty good about that.
It looks fine. It looks like kind of like when you're done with like a Gunplow kit, and there are some stickers on it, but it's still missing something. It looks like that, kind of.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go through the individual components as fast as I can. Onslaught is probably the worst of the bunch, unfortunately, by virtue of him having to hide an entire giant head in his chest. His alt mode is garbage. His head is just kind of sticking out of the top.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird truckish, huh?
Like, his head is sticking, like, his head is basically not even hidden. It's just kind of in the back of the truck mode. And his hands are actually hiding his head like he's doing peekaboo. And you don't notice this in the pictures because you put the cannon on top of his hands. But if you look at it from the side, his head is right there. His shoulders are kind of stupid in Onslaught's robot mode. It's unfortunate, and the thing that bums me out the most is the fact that for Onslaught, in addition to Bruticus, one of my main things is he needs to have his two twin cannons sticking out in his robot mode. You can't do that with Onslaught. And so he just has to hold his twin cannons very awkwardly as a gun.
Aww. Mm-hmm. Well, let's just wait for the third party.
Shut up. Picks up.
You're going to have to address it in some way.
I'll address it at the end of this.
Okay.
Let's go on to
Swindle.
Swindle. Yes, Swindle. Swindle is actually, I like him a good bit. His I was telling my roommate how his car mode, it looks like one of those really stupid Hot Wheels cars, like the super cartoony ones.
Yeah.
But
the ones they just make up.
Yes, which are the best ones. It's good. What I like about him is, like, he has the most solid flip mode of the bunch. Basically because it is the car with, and you just flip the feet out and that's it.
Yeah.
The cool thing about him is, for robot mode, actually, you have to flip the front half of the car entirely in order to turn him into robot mode. He's the only one who has, like, open hands, like they've been doing with Transformers recently.
Instead of the old square.
Exactly. He has the most solid, foot stance of the bunch. Like, you just pluck him down and he's completely fine. Mm-hmm. I feel like of the bunch, between him and Brawl, those two are the ones that look the most like their G1 counterparts.
Well, do they look like the ones from the game?
Yeah. Like, all of these look like the video game models. Only one that's a bit off is Onslaught, because he's not as beefy compared to the rest, but again, you have to turn this out into an actual physical toy that works, so I can understand why that happened. Let's going on to Brawl. Brawl is, I feel like I had the highest expectations of him because his from the pictures we got, his looked the most solid. And unfortunately, he's one of the ones that disappointed me the most in terms of robot mode. Mostly because he has a whole bunch of crap hanging off of his back. He has the entire back of his tank mode and the turret on his back. In addition to the fact that his legs are too long. Like, he just looks...
To be fair, the G1 toy also has the turret on the back.
This is just, like... The turret isn't so much the problem. I didn't word that right. The turret, the back of his tank mode, and his combiner port are just sticking off of his back.
Oh, they don't tuck in?
No, like, the turret you can move around. You can actually have it, you can move it up so that his, two tank cannons are pointing over his head, which is pretty cool.
Okay.
But no, it's just his proportions look wrong, and also his feet don't work, because they're just the kind of pull out, the feet that you just pull out of the side of the leg, and they have no locking point, so they just kind of immediately fold back in and he falls over.
Aw, poor Brawl. Mm-hmm.
Blastoff, I'll do him next. Blastoff looks ridiculous, because he's basically a giant rocket engine with a cockpit on the front.
Yeah, I don't really understand that vehicle mode for him. I feel like when they do some kind of fake spaceship, they usually just don't bring it together. Like, it doesn't look streamlined. It's just like...
It looks completely ridiculous, but I don't mind it too much.
Does he have the proper purple cow cameo?
Yes. Yes, he does.
Okay.
he's got some really solid feet, and his shoulders are confusing because they're not just like ball joints on a straight angle. Because the way his shoulders work, his shoulders are the back of the giant rocket engine. They're okay. on a 45-degree hinge that pegs into his chest, and then on top, then that's ball jointed, and then underneath that you have another hinge for his arms to pull out. And so his ball joints aren't straight, so that his arms go in and out or up and down. They instead kind of go in and out, so it's really awkward getting him to pose, actually.
Oh.
Yeah. My favorite of the bunch, though, is actually Vortex, which this brings up one funny thing about this toy as a whole, is that I think everyone on the internet disagrees in on which is their favorite and which is their least favorite, because Vortex is my favorite of the bunch. His helicopter looks like one of the Larvazoids from the old days, with a little helicopter pinwheel on it. But he's got a really solid robot mode. He's got a hip skirt as well. And he's got two blades. And that's all the individual ones. Now, combining this thing, this is basically a giant version of those Power Core combiners they did a couple years ago, if you remember those.
Yeah, you got one for my birthday.
Yes, I did. The joints basically work just like that, except they're a little bigger. And it also suffers from the same thing where they don't stand too well at times. But they have loads of clicky joints in them. And as a general whole, I think it works pretty well considering what it needed to accomplish. I think you know about this, but a really good hidden feature of this is the fact that every single limb does the Scramble City thing.
Yes, where each part can be either an arm or like... Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, it's a lot of fun trying to figure out the best configuration for this guy. Mm-hmm. And so it's a toy that's really fun to just pick up and mess with for a good hour or so. It's one of its strong points, I think.
One of my friends actually wanted to see if he could make an entire Bruticus with, like, all Brawl.
You could. You could. Yeah. Because, you know, between all the releases doing, you could have four different Brawls.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking that when I first got this guy. It's like, this dude would look awesome with all, you know, Vortex limbs or something.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, Bruticus, he's sort of weird because he's that one combiner they kept reissuing for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
They kept repainting him and They changed him a little bit over the years because they made it so you could peg all of his guns together, so that he could have the giant robot mode could have
a weapon,
big
too.
Combination guns.
Yeah,
yeah. So he's sort of like the default Decepticon combiner, other than Devastator these days.
Yeah, you can combine the guns on this one too. It looks stupid. But thankfully, they do the same thing that, like, the Energon toys did, where there's a bunch of pegs and holes everywhere on all the weapons, so you can always mix and match and figure out a better way to do it.
Okay.
But overall, I think this is a pretty successful toy. I think, a lot of people have been saying this is nowhere near as good as the France Project Bruticus and whatnot. And I think,
but that thing looks like shit, honestly.
I like it. But anyway, that's beyond the point. I think a lot of people are forgetting that this thing has a lot of constraints on it that a third-party toy doesn't have to worry about.
Like each component not costing $100.
Exactly. Each of these components has to cost, you know, $15. It has to do four modes. Let's keep that in mind. You know, leg, arm, robot, vehicle. And
yeah,
that... along with the fact that this has to meet safety standards for children as well. That's something a lot of those third-party toys don't have to worry about, so they have to go through safety testing and all that stuff, which is a whole involved process on its own entirely. And I don't know, I just feel like people aren't giving this thing a fair chance. And by people, I mostly just mean the raging people, because a lot of people do like this toy a good bit, with good reason.
Well, for all those raging people, you have to remember they really want G1.
Mm.
They just want to be like everything needs to be the G1 toy, but bigger and more articulation, mm-hmm. which is not possible.
No,
really, like never possible.
Mm-hmm. But no, I mean,
this... like because even Sideswipe isn't that. He's a reimagined version of the G1 toy.
Mm-hmm. But on the whole, I mean, considering I got this thing for less than retail and in G2 colors, which are my favorite colors, this thing is, like, if you haven't gotten it yet and you want this toy, this is one of the best options to go for. Aside from, like, the missing paint apps and whatnot, this thing is pretty great.
Yeah, the beautiful neon camouflage.
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah, G2 Bruticus is the one that I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah, he was one of my favorites, and he's the only one who's still together. Or the least broken, because the other one from G2 was Superion.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, Air Raid got his nose cone chewed off by my first dog.
Ooh.
Fireflight's wing broke. I tried to glue it back on, but it didn't work. Silverbolt and Skydiver still together. And Slingshot was made out of gold plastic.
Say no more.
Say no more.
I actually have a G2 Skydive at home. I wish I had more of those guys.
Yeah, the problem with it is that even if you did get a complete set, you still have to deal with the fact that Slingshot is probably going to break.
Yeah. Alright, that reminds me of one more thing this toy does that's... people may not take into consideration. The fact that this thing doesn't parts form at all. Everything is stored on each robot. So, again, that's another thing that this thing had to do in order, you know...
Don't they have two sets of hands on each?
No. Interesting thing about that, because I'll bring this up.
Okay.
You know, each of them has essentially two hands in them. One for left and one for right. Because Swindle, he just has two arms, or two hands, in the bottom of his feet, and you can just use whichever oar. Blastoff has one hand, but it's a symmetrical hand that the hands are in both feet, and you click the feet together and you pull the hand out from both feet. Each side has a additional thumb piece, and you just pull the thumb out for using it for left and right. Vortex has the karate chop hand, and that has a movable thumb, so you can switch it left to right. And Brawl has no thumb, so he can go anywhere.
Oh. He has no thumb.
He just kind of has a claw.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, I must be doing something wrong with that one. I need to figure it out.
Yeah. Alright. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's all for what we got. So let's do a little bit of what we've been playing. I'm going to go first.
Mm-hmm.
So I started replaying the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure PS1 game, the fighting game.
That's the one they brought over here, right?
Yes, and because we were playing it at my birthday party. And one of my friends commented this was back when Capcom could bring out anything to America. Like Cannon Spike.
Mm-hmm.
And Power Stone.
Oh, Power Stone.
Yeah, so... the first way I played it was through a emulator with an image file of the Japanese version. And it kind of changed my expectations of the US version, because the Japanese version still has all of the infamous JoJo sound effects that pop up during the fights. And it also has a Pocket Station game, but who cares about that? You know, other than that, you know, the US version, I paid too much for it, and now, years and years later, we have the HD remaster for Xbox 360 and PS3, which is just they put a filter over it. Yeah, it looks kind of cheap, but it has online play, and one of my other friends is like, you need to buy it so we can all play online. I'm like, all right. Yeah, it's definitely one of the better licensed fighting games out there. really fun. Kind of crazy. Certain characters seem really, really broken, like Iggy the dog, because he's very, very short.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how in JoJo's Part 3 they all have stands?
Yeah, yeah.
They're psychic helper things, mm-hmm. guardian spirit or whatever. With Iggy's, his stand is gigantic. It's called the Fool. It's a weird, like, dog thing made out of sand.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the computer player likes to turn it on and off constantly, so you can't hit the stand to damage him. It's like, oh, yeah, that's really cheap as hell. And also, one of the other characters, his pet shop, the bird, who is very small, does not have a stand that comes out, and he can shoot ice. So he's kind of hard to hurt as well. Mm. Yeah, so it kind of got me excited for the next part of the JoJo's anime, because it's going to do part two. And the old fighting game has Joseph Joestar in his teenage years as one of the characters, as well as the regular one from
Part 3. Oh, I didn't know that.
Part 3. Hmm. Yeah, they actually have a story mode for him.
Hmm.
Basically, one of the bad guys, his stand can make you de-age. You know, makes you into he makes you into a kid. But for whatever reason, it turned Joseph into a young man again. So he got to be one of the characters in the fighting game. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. I got a conversation with Renato about the game Spring and Mark 2. And I was like, because he said it's really expensive to actually buy that game. It's a PC Engine CD game.
Mm.
I was like, well, just emulate. And he's like, well, I couldn't get it to work on my emulator. And I was like, just use Daemon Tools if it says you need the CD. And he's like, oh, I tried for hours and I couldn't get it to work. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to fucking play this game.
I love that you're doing the Renato voice when you're talking as him.
I like his voice.
He has a very nice voice, don't get me wrong.
One of my friends, she really likes English accents, and she was very excited by his voice.
I see.
She wants, like, David Tennant to marry her. It's like,
oh, I thought most people did.
Well, you know, but she has that extra. She really, really likes English accents. Mm,
okay.
Although, is he Scottish, actually?
He
says something from the UK. Okay. But anyway, so Spring and Mark 2. Oddly enough, I did have trouble getting it running, but not for, you know, any problem with the emulator. I mounted the .image file instead of the .q file.
Mm.
It's like, oh, because PC Engine CD games, they see the CD differently than, like, modern games do. But when I was trying to find information how to get it to play, I found this weird argument where somebody was like, oh, I want to translate this game. And then somebody said, hey, two of the carriers are named Bush and Reagan. Another person was like, oh, don't remind me about the policies of those guys. To which some other guy goes on this huge, like, rant about how Reagan was great for America. And, and you know, how, what do you want the government to take, like, all of your paycheck? And I'm like, what the fuck does this have to do?
And this is on a translation thing?
Well, it was
like, on a site, I mean.
Yeah, this was just on a website, on a message board. I was like, I just want to learn how to play Spring and Mark 2. This was an old post, but I was like,
still.
Man. Yeah, it was on the Magic Engine forum. That's one of the best PC Engine emulators.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, guys. But anyway, okay. It's like, this guy really wants to make sure the government doesn't take all of his money that he used to buy cue cards. Or whatever. So the game's not that great. The first game is said to be a lot better. They are both shoot 'em ups.
Mm-hmm.
Spriggan 1 is a top down, and Spriggan 2 is horizontal. And Spriggan 1 actually takes place in some weird feudal Japan style setting, whereas Spriggan Mark 2 takes place in the future. you know. The I guess the cool thing about it is it's fully voiced. It does have cutscenes.
Hmm.
Not like full motion video.
Yeah.
There's some cool sprite tricks. They do a lot of rotation and scaling with the bosses, especially. They all seem to have segmented limbs that move around and shoot bullets at you.
Mm.
You have regenerating health, and you have a number of weapons you can switch to at any time in your little robot thing. And it's like, yeah, it's kind of neat, but it's not really that great. It's kind of dull most of the time, but oh well. I could be like, hey, Renato, I'm playing this, and you're not. And I'd like to close this out by talking about the ending to Just Cause 2.
Man, that has been a saga with this show. You playing Just Cause 2.
Me playing Just Cause 2.
Anyway,
well,
go on.
Yeah, okay. I was prepared for the ending by my friend, but... Well, he told me about how it ends. But even still, I wasn't really prepared to watch the ending to this game. Because... I know you said it's like, well... It's a sandbox game, they don't have great stories, this one especially, but this one is, like, so bizarre and kind of terrible, it's really hard to ignore.
Really?
Yeah. Because the whole thing is you're trying to find and kill the president of Panao, this guy who calls himself Baby Panay, because he's a short guy. You find his lair, which is it's a military base in the mountains. And the entrance of which is three giant stone faces of this guy carved into the rock, Mount Rushmore style, with the middle one opening up at the mouth. And when it does open up, Rico is like, oh, baby, you gotta use better toothbrush, or whatever. But, yeah. Or a better toothpaste, sorry. Okay, so you confront Baby Panay, and he's a raving short guy. He's not a midget, but he's just like this goofy ass ethnic stereotype in a nice suit. And he has an iguana on his shoulder all the time. So this other guy who was in the beginning of the game, I think he was, I forget who he is. Like, he's like the former president of Panao or something like that. He comes in with a grenade and pulls the pin, he's going to kill himself and Panay at the same time. And this is all in revenge for the death of Jade Tan, whom we rescued in the last mission, or a few missions ago. And it's like, you know, dude, if you just talked to Rico, this could have been avoided. But the thing is, you know, it blows up. The place is about to self-destruct. You get out of there. And then your job is to get into a helicopter and go destroy the oil fields. And this gigantic atomic submarine from the... Actually, no, your job was to blow up the tankers coming to steal oil from the oil fields. The tankers that came from Japan, China, and Russia. Because, you know, America needs this oil more than they do. So the giant-ass submarine comes in to stop you. It can shoot down your helicopter, but you really just have to get inside the big thing. Baby Panay is inside. He's kind of burnt on the side of his face, but, you know, no more's the wear. He has a rocket launcher. It's like, oh, whatever. You shoot him a bunch of times, and the final segment of this boss fight is... He's still alive. He goes to the front of the submarine where all the missile tubes are. And he's going to launch nuclear missiles at America, Russia, China, and Japan. Each one of these missiles has the livery of the country it's aimed at. You know, like flags on them.
Mm-hmm.
So you are... jumping from missile to missile, they're all flying pretty close to each other in formation for whatever reason. You have to shoot him. You don't kill him, you just make him fall down for a little bit because he's on the American missile shooting at you, so that you can quickly do the Simon Says thing where you push the buttons to disarm a missile.
Oh, great.
Yeah. It's not too bad in this game, though. And then at the end of it, you get onto the last missile. It goes to a cutscene. Rico stuffs him in this open panel on the missile, reprograms it to go destroy the oil fields, and he jumps off with his crazy grappling hook and whatever. And, okay, so he nuked the oil fields.
Well,
which the wiki for Just Cause 2 happily points out would not actually destroy the oil, because they're far enough below. Because the oil is far enough beneath the rocks.
Yeah, yeah.
So Don Sheldon, who's Rico's mentor and, you know, resident Texan guy, is like, Rico, why'd you do that? And Rico goes on this bizarre rant about how all the oil in Panao would have caused an even greater war fought over the resources of this island nation.
What?
And he says this part, I'm trying to remember most of it, but he's like, I'm not going to die in no apocalypse just so some fat cats in Washington can fill up his SUV on the way to Capitol Hill. And the blonde chick who's barely in the game, she's like, well, that's okay, Rico, because all this is on a need-to-know basis. You know, because he just totally fucked everything up.
Yeah.
And then Sheldon says, and this is the best part, aw, shucks, Rico. Now that's a Just Cause as any. Yeah, cut the credits. And then you're in mercenary mode. You can just, you know, complete the game. 100% it. But yeah,
that's bad.
That's why I said you can't ignore the story, because it's really, they're trying so hard to be sort of, you know, winking at the camera, but they also want to be sort of serious. Mm-hmm. And it's like, guys, no, this isn't working. You're not the Expendables. No. Yeah, so that's just the end of my saga. It Just Cause 2.
Oh, that game. Anyway, have you been playing anything else?
Not really.
Okay.
I tried to take a break from Just Cause 2 and put in Front Mission Evolved, and then I immediately went back to Just Cause 2. Because Front Mission Evolved is so terrible.
Yeah. Well, I've been playing a couple of games. I finally got around to playing Super Meat Boy, if you've ever heard of that game.
I've heard of it, but I always confuse it with Explosion Man.
Ah. Okay, well, it's basically, it's a platforming game, essentially. With, all you do is run and jump. Those are your only two abilities. And you have to save your girlfriend from the evil Dr. Fetus. And so this involves you, you know, jumping through a crap ton of platforming levels, avoiding, saw blades and lasers and homing missiles and beholder eyes and all that good stuff. And this is one of those games where it's a very simple game, but it's also incredibly difficult in its simplicity, such that it's got really tight controls. And so, like, if you jump a little too far to the left or the right, you will die, because everything kills you.
Sort of like N+.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it, kind of. And this game makes me swear a lot when I play it. Really funny thing about this game is, like, after you're done beating a level, it'll show you a replay of you beating the level, except it will show every single Meat Boy. Like, it'll show every single time you died in order to beat
it. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a bunch of, like, Meat Boys going on.
It is entertaining, because some of these levels it takes me, like, 50 tries to do. And you just see, like, 50 of them running into a spike pit or something. Yeah, that's a really fun game. I can see why people are so into it. Fantastic soundtrack, too. There's that, and then there's the other game, which I think you should check out. I think you might like it. Faster Than Light, if you've heard of that one.
I might have, but I don't know what it's about.
It's one of those games that was made through Kickstarter, as I recall. And basically, you're playing as a spaceship belonging to a Federation fleet. And your goal is you have to deliver important vital information to the Federation fleet before the Rebel forces catch you. And you have to jump from space sector to space sector. And so this is one of those games where it's just kind of randomly generated such that anything can happen every single time you play. So you start off as a spaceship and you have your little crew. And you jump from space sector to sector. And depending on what sector you may land in, you could either, you know, reach a trading post and buy some stuff, or encounter some aliens who want help with a program or something. Or you could just encounter pirates or rebel forces, and then you have to fight a space battle against them. And it's, I'm not sure what kind of game to describe this. It's a strategy game for sure. And
is it like turn-based?
Not exactly. Like it's, I guess real-time strategy is what this technically is. Basically,
okay.
Because you don't actually like move units. It's just if you're fighting against a spaceship, it's your ship is here, their ship is there, and then you have different things you have to worry about. Like you could have a shield system, weapon system, drone system, and all that good stuff. And so, like, your weapons will have a certain charge cycle to them. Once they're charged, you can shoot at the enemy, and then the enemy can target different. You can target different parts of the ship. Like you could target the shields, the engine, the weapons, such that if that's damaged, they can't use that anymore. And then,
so it's just like some kind of weird Xenogear style system, or
not quite. Like honestly, a YouTube clip is probably the best way to explain how this game works.
All right.
Because in addition to that, you have your crew in your ship as well, and they're always met. You can have them manning the various components of the ship, but at the same time, what you or the enemy can do is they could also have a teleporter on their ship, such that they could have their own troops come into your ship and start destroying your ship from the inside. And then at the same time, while still fighting against the other ship, you need to micromanage your own personnel and make them kill or get rid of the various intruders in your ship at the same time. And so it's really easy to get very lost in this game really fast. Because a lot can happen at the same time, because the environment affects you as well. Like, you could be in an asteroid field, so you're constantly taking damage at the same time. You could be in front of a star, so that you're constantly experiencing solar flares, which deal flame damage, while all this is happening as well. You could be in an electrical storm, which causes you to only have half of your available energy, such that you can't power all the components of your ship at the same time.
Is this good micromanaging or bad micromanaging?
It's good in that you can do it. Like,
okay.
Like, you could be overwhelmed very easily, but it's nothing that you can't ever surpass. Like, because the thing is, what I always forget, and it's such a stupid thing, is like, you almost always do have the option to just leave if you're in a bad situation. Like, you can just jump to the next space sector. So as long as you're not saying, you know, I can muscle through this, as long as you don't do that, you have a good chance of actually beating and accomplishing something.
Okay, so
I still haven't beaten the last boss, because he's a bastard ship, but
yeah, so this sounds like a better idea of, like, doing space stuff than that weird Wing Commander remake thing they're doing.
The British one, or what's it?
Yeah, it's like Section something or other.
Yeah, the Kickstarter one with the Macross jets.
No, not that one. This is the other one by the guys who made Wing Commander.
Oh, okay. I don't know about that one.
I forget its name. It's kind of, looks like it's kind of bullshit. They're actually not doing it through Kickstarter, but they are crowdsourcing it.
Okay.
I like how the trailer is just a bunch of chest thumping about how PC games are, like, not dead, and this is going to be a true space sim, how they're not dead either. And I feel it's, like, the same problem with MechWarrior Online, where they're just assuming that if we make a game like we did in the mid-90s with better graphics, people will buy it. You know, just because. nostalgia.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It only goes so far.
Yeah, it's like, you guys can't ignore, you know, decades of game design just so you can make Wing Commander 3 again, mm-hmm. or Privateer again. But, oh well.
Yeah, but that's what I've been playing.
Okay. I think we're ready to stop this one and go to our next segment, what we've been watching.
Okay.